Yes, it's always worth waiting for that final woof. Otherwise, you don't quite know where the whole thing is actually going to be. Anyway, it's time we actually launched with our usual fun station ident, which, because he had such a shortened time on the show last night, because as you well remember, Shaley, lots of exciting things occurred last night. I was due to be contacting Paul Zollo, great musician.
Again,
Paul was all scheduled for the whole system, and everything was excited, dialed up the number. Of course, I'd only written down Larry Nemechek's number, so we'd actually got Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek, as a poster. We did get Paul Zollo back in the end. It was, I put it down to this super moon that's working through. Anyway, let's just press this button here.
This is Philip Herdwood, voiceover artist, writer, and Renaissance man, congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
It was very good to actually get a proper British accent put together for that side of things, for one Philip to another. Phil Leonis in Los Angeles. We're very excited that it's a rare lunar trilogy of a supermoon, blue moon, and a lunar eclipse, which has been occurring simultaneously for Australia. Hello, Dean Hagland. Your operation will go fine. Asia. Hello, everybody. Chinese New Year will be happening soon as well, so that's all good. And some parts of the United States and Eastern Europe. So, you know, and of course, Donald Trump does a kind of mildly okay address to the nation. So it's all good, isn't it, Phil?
Well, I think the super blue blood moon, whatever it's called, might be partially responsible for the rather miraculous recovery of Fuzz Aldrin this week.
Yes,
After more than a month without eating, has eaten under her own power every meal for the last 3 days.
See, that's the kind of success that's just joyous throughout the globe, and we continue to find joy in that. So well done, Fuzz. Well done, everybody. In terms of, we should really finish the show now, shouldn't we, Shirley? And just sort
that
of
that is fantastic
it,
news.
It is very, very good news. Last week, of course, Gabriella in Gibraltar, you were doing a whole range of sort of key things, which we'll find out about in a few seconds. But inevitably, it's time for that inevitable moment where we need to lead with your own particular take on the weather forecast for Lincoln from Gibraltar. And then, of course, we'll reciprocate with Phil Leonis. So, Gabriella, in your own time, please, take it away.
Okay, so Lincoln's weather today has highs of 5 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade. It will be a dry, cold day with some good sunny spells of sunshine.
Nice put together.
Not bad. Good
response.
Like a good day.
Exactly. But will Phil Leonis concur? Or will he actually decide, no, it's completely different? Because, again, different hemispheres almost of the globe, really.
I feel like it's going to be warmer.
Phil Leonis, weather forecast for Lincoln from yourself from Los Angeles, please.
It's certainly warmer here in Los Angeles. What I'm concerned about is not so much your temperature and the what seems to be fairly clear but cloudy skies. What I seem to be concerned about is I'm reading about ice on some of the roads.
It's because it rained yesterday, and then I think it froze overnight.
Yeah, I mean,
it's quite slippy walking here.
The cars that I've been driving recently, because Lord knows I could go into the agony of a car, and what happens when your VW, a faithful VW, needs a new valve, and etc. Yeah, exactly. It's four cars up and down. It's been crazy. But yes, the ice sign has been coming on. Sort of little kind of almost
like a
little snowflake that's actually there. So, you know, clearly when your automobile best friend tells you that it's ice on the roads, then clearly it's there. Sorry, Phil, we cut you off in midstream there. I mean, I don't know, we're just getting into your flow, so carry on, please.
I just feel that perhaps my concern for the well-being of all the drivers out there who are facing not only heavier than usual traffic and slowdowns, but also some dangerous conditions. I feel that my concern was turned into being just about you.
Yeah. Well, if you were listening last night, you'll know that, as William Coles identified quite correctly, I use these shows as personal psychotherapy. I've decided for 2018 it will be a case of just working my angst out on air, really. So Down Alex Lefchuk's Brain is a possible sort of title. No, only kidding. That'd be too shocking for anybody. Anyway, had we completed the weather forecast, Phil, before we actually go into... Tell me about your childhood.
Nobody cares about the fact that it'll be sunny, dry, and 80 degrees here in Los Angeles. No one cares.
Marvelous.
Live from Gibraltar, With or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
You might sort of wonder, Shirley, what's he doing? It's partly because this week's Chilpack Hollywood actually feel like a year. I mean, it's not just an hour. It was like an hour. It was like, it's 1 hour 40. It's just going, I didn't manage to get beyond 1 minute 20. 1 hour 20. It's all good
stuff.
It was
the same as this month. This month seemed to go on for like 365 days.
No, we're in February now. We're in February. Yay, in Los Angeles finally. And Lincoln and Gibraltar. Last week, Phil, you were quite fascinated, I believe, unless you were lying. I don't know. He's an actor at times, his director. He could just be in the method. Who knows? But he seems to be expressing interest in finding out what Gabriella was doing when she was off to Seville to cover a meeting between the chief minister and the president of Andalusia. Is that true, Phil? Would you like to ask Gabriella what was happening in that auspicious event, which may not have made the CNN headlines?
The girl from Gibraltar in Seville for this August meeting, I mean, it sounds like the perfect foundation for a modern musical classic. I can't wait to find out what took place.
So it was the first time a chief minister of Gibraltar, which is our version of prime minister, I suppose, or Scotland's first minister, he asked if he could have a meeting with the president of the Andalusia Council, and so that's the southern region of Spain, and it was actually accepted. So the main issues they talked about was, of course, Brexit. But for Gibraltar, because we have a land frontier with Spain and we're the only territory under the UK that's leaving the EU that has a border, has a land border, so it really affects us quite a lot. So we just want to make sure that when we do leave the EU, there have been historically problems at the border, that we are cooperating with each other. So that's the main deal. It's a lot of cooperation. It was a friendly talk. It was just to see, you know, how we can get along and to what extent and how we can make sure that I think it's 8,000 Spanish workers who come through the border every single day, that they can pass swiftly, smoothly, without a problem. Although, you know, the border is controlled by central government, it's good to always have regional councils and always have talks with them.
It's good to talk, Phil. Something we've been trying to echo throughout the centuries and will continue to do so no matter which time zone we find ourselves in. When Phil arrives in Lincoln again, at the not just in future, and assuming she actually passes her audition later on today, I'm sure she will, we've got the director of the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company.
Ooh.
And I think that Phil might be sort of persuaded to try at least one of those beverages before too long. That's the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company, Susie Carlyle, who'll be joining us. But he may not. He may have gone off coffee by the time he comes back to Britain. He may have decided, no, I'm going to cleanse my system and take all that caffeine away.
Well,
and just
there's always
it.
Like green tea and chamomile tea. And
I've always thought, well, white tea, of course, which is really just boiling water. Sorry, white tea fans. It's just a case. Gabriella, in Gibraltar, before we actually let you go, we know you got Frodo. By the way, is he conscious or unconscious?
Well, I think he's unconscious. Well, I think he's conscious, but in front of the heater in another room that's been left on the heater for him.
I just want to say I really appreciate the Instagram posts.
Oh, thank you. I've been uploading a lot more since we talked about the Instagram last on the radio. I thought might as well put an extra effort. I've been uploading almost daily now.
One of these days, I think, you know, that meeting of the species, Fuzz Aldrin in Los Angeles, Frodo in Gibraltar, you know, even maybe it already has occurred. Maybe actually what Frodo's been doing when he's ostensibly asleep has been astral travelling to support his fellow life form in terms of Fuzz Aldrin, who, as we've heard, is doing well, which is excellent stuff. But anyway, in terms of monsters, Phil, and maybe the monsters are ourselves, really, but that's another philosophical debate. The top 10 very fine monsters, according to real-life cryptozoologist John Downs, who we're speaking to in the second part of the programme today, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, the Mongolian Death Worm, the Mermaid, the Earth Hound, the Yeti,
and a couple of flying snakes, actually, which has eluded me. Oh, yes, here we are. We have the chupacabras, the flying snake of Namibia, the Yowie, and the Cornish owlman. Should you actually find any evidence, even in Los Angeles, of these monsters existing, you could claim 50,000 English pounds. That is the reward the 14 Times are actually offering for this wonderful Capcom. Actually, they're £50,000 if you can find any of those particular areas. Phil, I think you've actually found the truth is out there, volume 3 already for you. Just a thought.
The chupacabra, of course, is one of my favorites. The mythology is very popular here in parts of Los Angeles. Though I find none of those cryptozoological monsters nearly as puzzling as the 45th president of the United States.
Well, you see, you
nice.
Go. It's an extraordinary turn of phrase. I'm from pretty much a wager, if I was a betting soul, which I'm not, that the topics that will be talked about with Richard Fitzwilliams and Phil Dearness basically mean we could actually have a four-course meal, actually, Shirley, because Phantom Thread and Last Flag Flying are the two movies that he's actually got up, and the kind of the eulogies that Phil was sharing about Phantom Thread on this week's Chilpack Hollywood Hour, and the whole and the way he was captured. But I don't want to do any spoilers here, but I think it's fair to say he liked it. Yeah. He might have changed, of course, by
it
then.
It does look really good.
Alex, certainly not a eulogy, maybe an elegy, but not a eulogy.
Okay, I can go with that. Phil, would you like to do that wonderful thing and across the oceans ask Gabriella those last two indefatigably wonderful questions?
Well, it could not be as interesting as what truly sounded like a fascinating event that you attended there in Seville, but have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Gabriella?
I've enjoyed it just as much as I enjoyed Seville.
Ah, well, that's very sweet. Can we look forward to connecting with your good self again a week from now?
Yes, definitely. I'll be here.
Oh.
splendid China Crisis, Black Man Ray. It's 17 minutes and 10 seconds past 8 o'clock here in Lincoln, England. In Los Angeles, it's 17 minutes and 16 seconds past midnight. In London, England, I think you're still on morning time. Are we not, Richard Fitzwilliams?
We most emphatically are.
Briefly, Juliet Stevenson and Leah Williams, they toss a coin to decide who's going to play whom in terms of this area. Now, I mean, given Phil's acting scenarios and his wonderful connections with drama tuition and ensuring that his students will get in the moment, and I'm sure when he's directing, wants pop number one word, which I often thought of having a tally chart the number of times he uses the word authentic. You know, ding, authentic, ding, etc. Authentic performances. Sorry, Phil. Just
you already knew that I was going to criticize Last Flag Flying for not being that, didn't
well,
you?
I did. I'm not, no spoilers for me as we go into the debate thing. But briefly, Richard, do you want to do the theatrical piece first?
I just wanted to mention it because it is an electrifying moment. They move toward each other in the front of the stage. A member of the cast spins a coin. They themselves don't know who they're going to play. And I was absolutely fascinated by this. I mean, Friedrich Schiller's play was staged at the National 20 years ago, and it had Isabel Hopper as Mary Stuart, and nobody could understand a word she said. It was notorious.
Yeah, she's French.
Isabel
Hopper is French.
The excuse brought up in France is exactly the excuse the theatre used, and it was hilarious.
That's one of the reasons why, unfortunately, even Elizabeth sort of in the end had to give the order to say, no, incidentally, just for clarification, we're not referring to Professor Mary Stuart, the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Lincoln here. It's the historical Mary Stuart. People could easily be confused.
With the excellence of the performances here, I was absolutely fascinated because the play, of course, centres round Elizabeth's decision to finally to have Mary executed, which, of course, she knows will haunt her, blacken her name, and it's an interesting, fascinating insight into the two actresses, Juliet Stevenson, a ruthless Elizabeth, her changing moods, her caprices, her vanity, how the challenges she faces affects her, and Leah Williams, as the eponymous heroine of the play, charm, openness, sincerity, and torment. Very, very fine, excellent theatre, and the set, well, everyone, as it were, is in a form of a prison. It's not just Mary imprisoned in Fotheringay, because they move round in rather extraordinary circles, and it does draw you in. Despite some miscasting in some of the supporting roles, I was very, very impressed with this, and I think an excellent couple of actresses. I mean, Stevenson was perfect as the Duchess of Malfi 20 years ago, and of course the plot has echoes in our own time. Britain also has an uncertain future outside of Europe, so a play to savour.
And this takes place at the Duke of York's Theatre in London. And I haven't actually found how long it continues for, so we're not sure in terms of that. We'll find that out whilst I'm sure Phil will have things to say about Mary Stuart, two queens, one in power, one in prison. It's all in the execution. Sorry, obviously somebody was actually having some fun there in terms of the delivery. Let's go then, Richard, let's offer it to Phil once again, because after all, he did decide which one we go with first, you know, and he selected Jumanji beforehand. Phil, Phantom Thread or Last Flag Flying, which one would you like Richard to lead with before you actually insert your, as ever, top line critical comments?
Oh, I don't think we can go wrong. So I offer it up to the dealer's choice. Two great directors represented by these two films. I found one to be a masterpiece, one to be a bit of a disappointment, but I'm eager to hear Richard's take on both. So whichever one you're more ready for, it's literally a coin flip, a coin toss.
As it were, yes, an appropriate metaphor. I'll go with Phantom Thread because I was absolutely fascinated by this film, and especially since I used to cover London Fashion Week years ago. It's the insight, of course, into the creative process, but not primarily about fashion. As you know, it is an unusual, putting it mildly, love story. Paul Thomas Anderson is an amazing director. Daniel Day-Lewis, well, is there a finer actor? It's quite extraordinary reading an interview with him about playing Reynolds Woodcock, a famous but emotionally sterile dress designer in London in the 1950s, whose life has changed after he meets Alma, the girl who becomes his lover and muse. He said he found it so overwhelming that he was plunged into depression and would never act again, and it may well be that this is his last performance. He's certainly imbued it with an idiosyncratic panache, I have to say. I mean, he runs this noted couture house, the House of Woodcock, with his sister Cyril, a performance from Leslie Manville, which has a precision that I can only describe as absolutely brilliant, between her and Alison Janney for Best Actress. Well, the London Film Critics Awards on Sunday, which was fascinating, two changes that gave me seismic shocks, Timothée Chalamet beating Gary Oldman for Best Actor, and quite extraordinary. We had three billboards win. That I did expect, but I did not expect Sean Baker to win for The Florida Project, a marvelous and spectacular and colourful evening. But I mention this because Leslie Manville was there and gave a good speech and did win Best Supporting Actress, which for a performance which is just amazing. I mean, and she's very good in Mike Leigh's films, but here, running the lines of her brother, a fastidious bachelor, creature of habit, requiring certain routines to be strictly observed, devoted to the memory of his late mother, she's actually got to cope with Woodcock himself. But Alma, played by Ricky Creeps, we meet her at a seaside hotel. She's a beautiful waitress. She becomes his inspiration. She wears his most stunning creations. They begin a relationship. She falls in love with him. But when she finds he can't respond to any change in his rigid lifestyle, when he starts to resent her, she resorts to the most extraordinary means to ensure he does become reliant upon her. Now, do you buy this particular love story? I have to say, I've seen this film twice, and the second time I bought it a bit more because it is decidedly weird and it adds a touch of the macabre to a film which is fabulous to look at. I mean, the one aspect of it I did enjoy, not so much Alma telling a story in flashback, which is rather luridly colourful in a light when she talks to the doctor, who plays a rather curious role in this film, considering Woodcock's, shall we say, the state of Woodcock's health. No surprise there, no spoilers here. I mean, it's a phenomenally beautiful film visually. The musical score is extremely good. It's gorgeously mounted. The costumes and the settings recreate the lavishness and grandeur of the period. And the social life, the couture, fashion shows, estate occasions, all of that is magnificent. An insight into the perverse nature of desire and the darker side of genius. It's grown on me the second viewing, and I was fascinated by it. But when you've got Paul Thomas Anderson directing Daniel Day-Lewis, you're going to get something extraordinary, and well, we've certainly got it, and it is a fascinating film. I didn't know whether it would make the final Best Picture list for the Oscar nominations, because some people have not warmed to this film. It's a hard... Thomas Woodcock is a hard character to warm to. You aren't meant to very easily, but it's an extraordinary insight into the process of becoming a genius, and he's added a love story, which not everyone will, I think, believe. But I was intrigued.
Are you saying ultimately, Richard, that maybe that love story might not be seen as totally authentic? Sorry, that's Phil's cue, actually.
Yes, I think will find that that is beyond.
Okay, it's Phil's cue.
Wait. Yes, just very quickly. What I loved about the movie the first time I saw it was I had that moment of epiphany when you catch on to what is really taking place and you say, oh my goodness, this actually isn't a movie about the creative process. This isn't a movie about fashion. It's a movie about sadism and masochism and a submissive, dominant love story. And only upon further reflection do I then say, well, wait a minute, a movie about S&M and sadism and masochism and domination and submission, why, that's the perfect movie about the creative process and the fashion industry. What a wonderful metaphor for what it is to live within a creative lifestyle, where you are constantly seeking to dominate your muse, but in fact, you always end up enslaved to your muse.
For a moment, I was having a flashback there to one of Phil Lynas's fantastic movies, The Story of O, but I best not talk about that. It's so...
Never.
It's the way that the painting was done in the opening sequence. I thought, that's surreal. That's a director by Phil Lynas. It's amazing, yeah. Little treat. Anyway, sorry. We were waiting for several years to actually just insert that, and perfect time. You see, it's the three moon. It's the blood moon that it works. But Shaylee, will you be checking out the... thread.
100%. Yeah, I saw the advert the other day. The whole thing is just really intriguing. And just everything to do psychologically with your relationship with your relatives and stuff like that. It's interesting how it impacts an individual so severely. And it's really interesting about the S&M thing. I didn't think of it in that kind of way, but it does make sense.
Well, given your dissertation studies of graphic narratives and pornography in Victorian England, it's a whole new world. But obviously, don't worry, it's only 28 and a half minutes past 8 o'clock here in Lincoln, England. And we can also point out that the Mary Stuart tickets are actually available until the 31st of March, because the Theatre of Mary Stuart run at the Duke of York's Theatre in London's West End continues until March the 31st. If you're okay with this, Richard, I'm going to ask Phil to go next with his thoughts on Last Flag Flying.
Absolutely.
Phil.
Oh, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I am an enormous fan of Richard Linklater. I think that no one has more consistently been doing innovative and compelling work in a variety of genres over these last several years. And I am going to try to work authentic into the review, because you'd be disappointed if I didn't. I found it lacking largely because of an inauthentic lead performance by Steve Carell. It's not a bad performance, but it pales especially in comparison to the actors he's working with. And it was one of these movies that really troubles me, because it gets financed by virtue of Steve Carell's performance, and yet he's the very reason it doesn't work.
That, I have to say, is a harsh judgment. I agree with you totally about Richard Linklater. I mean, just looking in front of me to this wonderful list of movies he's given us, Boyhood, Before Sunrise, Before Midnight, Before Sunset, I mean, I look forward to it enormously. As a chronicler of the human condition, he never fails to entertain me. And a road movie, I'd suggest, of an unusual kind, based on Darryl Pondysand's novel, and of course the link has been much explored to the last detail. A road movie of a very, very unusual sort, and comradeship between three former soldiers renewed when the body of one of their sons, Larry, comes home from Iraq. Now, this is a buddy movie that I have to admit I enjoyed it enormously. That parts of the plot I didn't entirely buy, but when you've got three actors on what I saw as fine form, you've got Sal, played by Bryan Cranston, seeing in the episode the... Larry, Doc Shepherd, played by Steve Carell, discovers the truth about his son's death, which has been concealed by the military. He's determined to take him home, to bury him himself in New Hampshire, which is his right, and gets a Marine escort from his best friend. Cranston plays Sal, who's an alcoholic and always sees an opportunity to provide some lively hijinks to whatever he's doing. And the pastor, I loved Lawrence Fishburne's Reverend Richard Muller, ungodly past antics, and together with the doc, they reunite most memorably. And I thought most of this film was very funny. Sometimes I thought it was hilarious. Normally I think his films are perfection, but this does veer towards sentimentality, and we know what they were up to in Vietnam with morphine, which they should not have been, and somebody died as a result. And when they visit the mother in Boston, that scene was, I think, not worthy of Linklater and his normal standard. But I did enjoy Cranston's gloriously idiosyncratic zest for life, Fishburne is absolutely hilarious and wonderfully rounded as a performance, I thought. And Steve Carell as Doc, I thought rather good. I thought he was very good as a quiet man who had hidden depths. I mean, you think of him in Foxcatcher, and I mean, you see the variety of roles he can play. I mean, I did enjoy the movie. Of course, it highlights the insanity and the cost of America's wars. It does give an insight, I thought, and rather touching view into how they shape the lives of ordinary people. I remain a Linklater admirer and devotee, as you are. But I got a great deal more out of it. Equally, I see that the award season, it has not done well. And perhaps one of the reasons is that it veers towards sentimentality rather often. And though I thought the performances were very good, they haven't reached levels that some of his movies have, in the opinion of many. But no, I would recommend it. I did find bits of it very, very funny.
At Linklater's best, and so many of these movies have been great, including the college comedy Everybody Wants Some a couple of years ago.
At
his best, Linklater's films feel improvisational even when they're not. And this film struggled to find moments that felt fresh and felt spontaneous. When they did come, they were largely due to Bryan Cranston. I think this was a case where they really struggled to adapt the book. And so I would rather actually have an audio recording of Bryan Cranston reading the book than ever see Last Flag Flying again.
Did you laugh, though?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I laughed. And when I laughed, I was sometimes when it was the funniest, I also was aware that I was laughing in spite of the fact that those scenes were the least believable.
Which I think you would agree, when they visit the mother, that is not a believable scene, I didn't feel.
No, it was wish fulfillment, but I was disappointed, it was one of the films I was looking forward to the most this season, and I went to an advanced screening of it, and I must say the crowd walking out was rather nonplussed. So I got the sense early on that this was not going to find footing during the awards season.
Which, of course, brings us to Boyhood, and, well, I'd have voted for it for Best Picture.
Oh, that movie. When that came out, I said that movie could have been twice as long, and I still would have been sitting there watching it. I mean, that was a movie I never wanted to end. They could have done a 6-7-8 hour cut, and I think it still would have been a masterpiece.
Oh, a movie, an absolutely amazing movie. Fantastic. I mean, it really was. Boyhood completely hooked me. But on this one, yes, I mean, I enjoyed it very much, but I agree, it isn't in the same league equally. I did get a lot out of it, but I've only seen it once.
I think Alex has left the building. No. I think the rest of the show is ours.
Only teasing, you know.
He would expect me just to mention William and Kate's Nordic
really?
Visit. Yes, I think you...
Okay. A quick mention before we go into the final two questions, and then it enables Sheila and myself to actually talk about Anthony Hopkins' merits in Bram Stoker's Dracula with Francis Ford Coppola a few years ago. This is an interesting...
Well, I would just simply mention that the desperation of the government to promote Brexit is such that they are using the top soft power that we have, which is William, Kate, Harry and Meghan, believe me, will be on the trail pretty soon, and there's no question about it, since the field of the cloth of gold, this sort of diplomacy has had a purpose, and with so many royal relatives, you know, it's almost like an extended family, because the King of Harold...
Everywhere
of Norway,
you look, there's another royal relative coming
cousin
through.
Of the Queen.
Fantastic.
And the,
we're all pals. We're all friends together. Look, I mean, we're all Victoria's great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren.
Well, that extraordinary... this extraordinary extended family link. And the Swedes have a rather colourful royal family. And there's no question at all that Crown Princess Victoria marrying her personal trainer, but she is extremely popular, and They pioneered marrying for love, and if only we at that time, because you think back to the 60s and the early 70s, that's when the Swedish, current Norwegian and Swedish kings married from background.
Richard, we can go back. We can go back to 1919, 1920, and the onset of the modern marriage, and just listen to the recent edition of Past Prologue, which we produced and transmitted last week.
I think you should be listening, though, looking at the ice hockey game that Kate was playing. Did you enjoy it?
I'm not really an ice hockey fan, to be honest.
She looked splendid.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the male gaze, Richard. It's all right saying she looked splendid, but then, you know.
What about the Erdem gown at the British ambassador's?
Likewise, I just feel somehow soiled by actually employing the male gaze to actually comment on the clothes that a female is actually wearing. I mean, I don't know if Shirley got anything to add to that. I mean,
we'll be here all day.
Exactly. You know,
fashion, we began with fashion. With Daniel Day-Lewis, and I mean, very, very interesting to see the comments that Phil was making about the creative process.
Well,
certainly, without giving too much away, he captured quite a lot of the flavour of that movie, but I have to say that when you actually see an Erdem gown that stuns, and remember, she's heavily pregnant and had a difficult pregnancy, it's fantastic.
Yeah, well, again, I can't say that I can recall being pregnant in previous lives, but it's tough, you know. Sorry, Phil.
Actually, yeah, we began not with Phantom Thread. We began with Mary Stuart.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to point out, if I may, that when I was in London in 2011, Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller were in Frankenstein, and they were switching off the roles every night. I'm very excited by the prospect that Mary Stuart will still be playing when I'm in London in March.
Yeah.
And it is playing to packed houses because, you know, both Leo Williams, who I remember seeing in Oleana with David Suchet to great effect, and then subsequently opposite Michael Gambon in Skylight, David Harris play. I mean, she is quite a crowd puller, but Juliet Stevenson is one of our finest actresses, so do book in advance. And
or I book in advance, or I drop the name Richard Fitzwilliams like an anvil at the box office.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, they'll, in which case you'll be, I suspect, offered one of the boxes.
Nice. Which brings us neatly round to the wonderful way in which we box off this particular section. And Richard, would you like to ask Phil Leonis those two final interrogatives that you know means we put that audio punctuation spot at the end of this little sequence?
Indeed, Phil. Have you enjoyed your appearance on today's show?
Royal matters of the heart, fashion, S&M, theater. What was not to enjoy, Richard? And above all, getting to speak with you. Of course, it was great fun.
I have to mention what is not to enjoy. It reminded me of Bernard Shaw at a party once, and his hostess saw him standing alone, and she went up to him and unwisely asked, "Mr. Shaw, are you enjoying yourself?" Shaw turned to her and replied, "Certainly. There is nothing else here to enjoy."
Something.
And on which note, will you be back next week with us?
Of course I will, Richard. I have nowhere else to go.
There are moments, Shaley, when I really think that the moment I introduced these two chaps was a period of history which clearly needs to be enacted for long periods to come, particularly when we've got a rare lunar trilogy of a supermoon, a blue moon, and a lunar eclipse occurring. Go, Shaley, last two questions for Richard Fitzwilliams, and then they can both vanish into the distance.
Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Enormously.
Always. And can we rely on you for next week?
Absolutely.
Perfect.
I am just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I have squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and jest, still the man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. When I left my home and my family, I was no more than a boy in the company of strangers, in the quiet of the railway station, let him scare. Laying low, seeking out the poor quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know. Lie-la-lie, asking only workmen's wages, I come looking for a job, but I get no offers. Just to come home from the wars on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. La 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 la. Then I'm laying out my winter clothes and wishing I was gone, going home, where the New York City winters are bleeding me. Stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame, I am leaving, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains.
You see, Shaylee, you can see that playing as a backdrop to Harry as he's going through his life, his experience, the bare knuckle TV movie, the bare knuckle series, the bare knuckle, Shaylee, the whole bare knuckle thing. That probably suggests that we've got some connection with bare knuckle coming up next. What connection do you think that might be, Shaylee McKenzie?
Ian Lennox.
Ian Lennox is up next, a bare knuckle man if ever there was one. How are you, Ian Lennox?
I'm okay, mate. How are you?
Very good indeed. A wonderful triple whammy of a lunar eclipse, a fantastic giant-sized supermoon, and a blood moon, and three goals for Man City, and 15 points clear. I think it's satisfactory. We've got 68 points. That's I think 34 points ahead of Newcastle.
15 points clear, is it?
15, yes, exactly.
You're not going to lose five games, are you?
I hope not. Otherwise, we're talking a seismic collapse.
Not unless somebody smuggled the Brazil team in.
The sort of things that Jose Mourinho will get up to, who knows?
Yes, exactly.
You know, any sort of line on that basis.
But he's fallen way back now.
Well, congratulations on a hard-fought 1-1 draw with Burnley. It just shows the quality is still there. So marvellous stuff there. Which is great. Shall we tease Ian for a moment, Shaylee?
Go for it.
I'm going to tease you, Ian, because Shaylee and myself have both seen the script that Jenny Finch has put together for tomorrow's Book of the Month, which goes to recording there. So we kind of know what she thinks about the whole thing. And I think it's fair to say, no spoilers, it kind of chimes with your own view, Shaylee, in terms of some of the things that actually...
I think it's very true, Shaylee, yeah.
Yeah, so it's good. It's interesting. But that's all we can say, really, Ian, because we know, but you know, clearly you're going to have to wait at least 28 hours before it's actually released.
You should have told him. Yeah, that was nervous.
Well, you know, in the past, we've had Ian as a mystery voice and we've kind of, you know, dropped him into the show, etc. This time around, I thought, no, you know, he does the Thursday links. Let's not bring him in as a mystery voice and say, oh, Ian Lennox, what do you make about the whole thing? It's okay. We'll just sort of nurse it through that whole process. So that's good. So
he's not going to be able to sleep now.
Yeah, well, it's because we've got, obviously, your view, Shaylee. We've got Jenny's view. We've got Rob Nichols' view, we got my view as well, and the most important perhaps is our listener. And don't forget, you can get Bare Knuckle for a mere
$1.99.
You know, it's less than you pay for a tea and coffee at Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company. Maybe not. We'll be speaking to Susie Carlisle on the second part of the programme, so we'll find out more about the excitement for that, as well as monster hunting. Ian, have you ever considered a career as a monster hunter?
No. I've never really thought about monsters. Aren't they mythical things?
What's that coming over the hill? Is it Ian Lennox? Is it Ian Lennox? No, it is.
The monster is Ian Lennox going the other way.
Exactly. It is a monster. But there is, according to Capcom, a £50,000 reward that's being offered, which we're going to be speaking about with monster hunter Jonathan Downs, who is director of the Centre for Fortean Zoology. And John actually may well be joining us again on the programme in the near future to actually chat about this. We've got... the Cornish Owlman, the Flying Snake of Namibia, the Chupacabras, clearly the Loch Ness Monster.
The Flying Snake?
Yes, Flying Snake of Namibia.
What does it do? Flick from tree to tree, isn't it?
Pretty much.
I feel like this is a double-edged sword, though, because on the one hand, technology has got so far that you might actually be able to, like, fake it. But then if it is fake, technology has got so far that you can actually disprove anything.
Well, apparently, 1 in 10 of us believe that monsters are real. Of course they are. They're the human race.
Uh-huh. I've been watching politics recently.
Well, exactly. Oh,
wow. I always believed that the Loch Ness Monster was a real thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure it's alive today.
I suspect it was a real thing in the man's chance of... creating PR for Loch Ness, actually.
That is a thought, you know, because clearly...
Nottingham's got its own Robin Hood tree or something else, and King and
Charles... I've actually been there.
How could you forget, Ian, of course, the Tale of the Langton Worm?
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
Pensure Monument.
Yeah, Pensure, exactly.
When I was a young bloke, I went off to live in France, and somebody sent me a Christmas card with the whole of the Langton Worm song on it. Mm-hmm. So, like, about 10 stanzas, I think. Mm-hmm. And being on my own, I learned the whole lot. I used to get drunk in France and sing the whole bloody thing. With a chord.
That's fascinating.
I'll give you a little line from the review, Ian, because I just thought, Lennox draws on his experiences as a journalist in the Northeast. That's all I shall say. All right? That'll be one of the lines that'll
see,
be in
there. See, he'd forgot about it, and now you just brought it back up.
I was almost feeling hungry again.
it's a case of, do I actually sort of go on about the...
I don't know, did I tell you that when the book first came out on Kindle, I got 4 or 5 of my friends who were like boxers, street fighters, and really tough guys, to come along to do a picture with me. And there was 4 of them. Arthur Kenji was one, actually.
Excellent.
Glenn McCrory is a world champion boxer. Mm.
Yeah.
There's a guy called
Paul
Tucker.
Fist on the cover, of course.
Yes.
Yes.
Which he provided free of charge.
Nice. No image rights there, then. Well done.
I had a threat, but never mind. and Paul Tucker Grant, who was, I think, a full contact world champion sport. And, who was he? Oh, Steve Black, who we know very well.
How could you forget the trainer of Johnny Wilkinson and others, and best friend of Lee Clark and Kevin Keegan and a whole heap of other fine folk there.
The thing was, the four of them knew each other individually, but they never, I don't think, for years and years, if ever, they'd actually met together, you know? Mm. So at the end of it all, I said, look, thank you. I'd really appreciate you coming, you know, you busy people coming along and actually bothering to help me. But then I said, actually, I think you've enjoyed your company. You've enjoyed yourself so much, you'd be thanking me. So they all said, thank you very much. And they arranged to meet on a monthly dinner.
Do you know, I mean, I feel the same with Richard Fitzwilliams and Phil Leonis in many ways. It's one of those things where you think, you know, they take it over the whole thing. I mean, they're into, as you say, the bromance system here.
Oh, it's there is a bromance, for
if
you, sure.
If you're ever sort of looking for a mild way to kind of cast your ear, your creative ear, over two fine souls from the film world, then literally download the podcast to these Midweek Drive Morning Editions and listen to your warm-up act in many ways, Ian. You know, Richard and Phil, Fitzwilliams and Leonis. It's like,
Phil gone to bed now, is he?
Yes, he's gone. Yeah. Well, we don't know, actually. I mean,
maybe he's rang Richard Fitzwilliams to continue the conversation.
Something inappropriate.
he could be listening to us, you know. I don't know.
I don't think so.
He could be looking after Fuzz Aldrin, of course, his slightly poorly cat who has been going through the wars.
I sympathise with that.
I don't think we ever quite. I don't think Phil actually realised the connection between Ian, Ollie, and Obo and Fuzz Aldrin. I.e., Ollie, Obo, and Fuzz are all members of the feline family who've selected to live with an ex journalist and indeed a movie director.
Yeah.
Fuzz Aldrin?
Yeah.
Is that a play on the Buzz Aldrin?
Well, she was a rescue cat, and she was a rescue cat who was a very pioneering spirit. And she was in such a state of horrendous disrepair when she was rescued, left in the steaming heat of Los Angeles in a box. She was the only one who actually survived of the kittens who was actually there.
Oh, no.
So they decided, and because they couldn't actually determine the gender at the time, they weren't sure male or female, so they actually allowed it as Fuzz Aldrin. So there we go. That was the history.
It's a really cool name, yeah.
And how old is she now?
Yes, but not when she's actually gone down
she's
with the
really
kind of illnesses
Ill, yeah.
she has been going down
oh,
with
toxoplasmosis,
and indeed the veterinary fees in the States have been huge. So,
yes, it's a wonderful health service they've got over there.
For all
designed
kinds of
animals. Designed for profit, I think. It's designed to make people rich.
Yeah, for people, human beings, anybody.
If
you can't pay, go away. Exactly.
Thank heavens people get ill as we make money on it.
Yep. And there goes another ideological representation of parts of our world which we need to really start addressing and getting sorted out. I was actually thinking, Shaley, I've been a little bit cruel with respect to Newcastle United over the last few years because they have actually won things.
Be able to tell.
You've won the championship twice. You've got the championship trophy. You should celebrate that.
But unfortunately, to win the championship, you've got to be relegated twice as well.
Yes, well, you know,
well,
that's
the drawback. Most people don't volunteer for that sort of thing.
I'm just flagging it up.
I prefer to stay in the Premier League.
So when I kind of was ridiculously saying, the last trophy you won was the First Cup in 1969 and you've lost finals. No, you've actually won the championship twice. So, celebrate that. You know, that's positivity. Yeah.
Probably winning it a third time, hopefully, in a couple of years.
It's a way forward. As we mentioned, up next, director of the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company, Susie Carlisle, will be speaking to John Downs, Monster Hunter. And we've also got Sue Baker from the Time to Change project, which is a fantastic sort of project that's coming through today. Today is actually Time to Talk Day. Two-thirds of people in the UK feel they have no one to talk to when it comes to personal conversations on topics such as mental health, money problems, and relationships. When asked why, top reasons were never being able to find the right time or the right place. So this is Time to Talk Day 2018 that we'll be talking about on radio, the best way of communicating and ensuring that actually we help each other.
There's always a time to talk, always.
There should always be. Time to talk, part of Times to Change. Millions of conversations are expected to take place today. We've just been engaging in one, Ian. You know, over 2,500 workplaces will be hosting their own activities, including Virgin Trains and Highways England. PG Tips will be facilitating chats over cups of tea, and it's made a donation of thousands of tea bags made available as part of a chatterbox full of resources. There are 1,300 people in the community, such as lollipop people, mountain rescue groups, gardeners, runners and librarians, and 800 schools taking part. So there we are, Shaley. Time to Talk Day.
800 schools?
Yes. Let's hope that they will talk as well.
Yeah.
But obviously when...
You won't be able to stop them.
Yeah, okay. Last two questions for Ian Lennox, please, Shaylee. Unless, give him a few more words from this little review.
Here we go.
A prolific writer, Ian Lennox set his first novel, The 60s Man, on Tyneside. I can't say any more. That's it. Okay.
Where are you getting all this stuff from?
One of the things about producing the show is you get a view of the script beforehand, so you just check it's fit for broadcast.
Yeah,
you received a copy for this show, presumably, Ian, about a couple of weeks ago when we planned it.
You mentioned it.
Yeah, it's okay.
Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
Excellent. Are you back with us again in the very near future?
I do hope so. Yes.
That's what we like to hear. Excellent. Coming up, the news after 10 Walls, Walking with Elephants.